Tracy Sable tonight on EWTN News Nightly, Full Court Press. President Joe Biden announces a proposed overhaul of the nation's highest court. We're at the White House. No-win situation. In Venezuela, both sides claim victory in the socialist country's hotly contested presidential election. A heinous mockery. A church leader in the U.S. reacts to the depiction of the Last Supper at the opening ceremony of the Paris Olympics. And something to chew on. Why Pope Francis says the parable of the loaves and fishes contains a message for us all. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the Feast of Saints Martha, Mary, and Lazarus. Our top story tonight, President Joe Biden tells EWTN the U.S. Supreme Court needs to be reformed. The White House says that he wants to impose term limits for Supreme Court justices and add a binding code of conduct. According to the president, it's, quote, to restore trust and accountability. And that's not all. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. So in.
Tracy, as he left the White House today, I asked President Joe Biden about his proposed Supreme Court reforms. Now, he also wants a constitutional amendment that would limit presidential immunity. But with just 99 days to go now until November 5th, Election Day, it is far from certain, no guarantee, that he'll get what he wants.
President Joe Biden departs the White House, stopping to take my question about the Supreme Court.
Why do you want to reform the Supreme Court, sir? Why would you like to reform the Supreme Court?
The president arrived in Texas a few hours later to deliver a speech at the LBJ Presidential Library in Austin, marking the 60th anniversary of the Civil Rights Act. Ahead of the trip, the White House releasing what it calls a fact sheet, stating that in recent years, the Supreme Court has overturned long-established legal precedents protecting fundamental rights. This court has gutted civil rights protections, taken away a woman's right to choose, and now granted presidents broad immunity from prosecution for crimes they commit in office. On the flight to Texas, Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre and Director of the Office of Public Engagement, Stephen Benjamin, addressed reporters.
President Biden and Vice President Harris are committed to ensuring that no one is above the law. And in America, the people rule.
In June of 2022, when the High Court sent Roe v. Wade packing, President Biden blasted the justices.
With this decision, the conservative majority of the Supreme Court shows how extreme it is, how far removed they are from the majority of this country.
And this year, when the Supreme Court determined that former presidents have broad immunity from prosecution,
this decision today has continued the court's attack in recent years on a wide range of long-established legal principles in our nation, from gutting voting rights and civil rights to taking away a woman's right to choose.
The GOP also blames Vice President Kamala Harris for trying to influence the court, writing, it's all part of Kamala's scheme to pack the Supreme Court with far-left radical judges who will render decisions based on politics, not the law, adding, Kamala's on a crusade to undermine every last American institution and remake them in the radical left's image so she can force through her socialist agenda.
Now, while in Texas, President Biden was also scheduled to travel to Houston to pay his respects to the late Representative Sheila Jackson Lee, who died July 19th at the age of 74. He then returns here late tonight. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Okay, thank you, Owen. And now to former President Donald Trump, who has agreed to be interviewed by the FBI. It is part of the investigation into the assassination attempt in Pennsylvania earlier this month. The special agent in charge said they wanted to get Trump's perspective on what happened that day. Through hundreds of interviews, the FBI has developed a portrait of the 20-year-old shooter. They revealed the gunman had carefully concealed more than two dozen online purchases of weapons and explosives using different aliases. While Iowa's new heartbeat law goes into effect today, the state lawmakers approved the legislation last summer, but a lower court temporarily blocked the ban from going into effect after abortion providers argued in a lawsuit that it goes against Iowans' constitutional rights. The Iowa Supreme Court disagreed and rejected the suit last month in a 4-3 ruling. The law prohibits abortion once a baby's heartbeat is detected, which is typically around 6 weeks. All right, now to Israel, where leaders there are promising retaliation for Lebanon's deadly rocket attack, which killed 12 children and teenagers. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu visited the scene of the strike earlier today. He promised, quote, "Our response is coming and it will be severe." Thousands of mourners turned out for the funerals of 10 of the 12 children. The strike has raised fears of a broader regional war between Israel and Iranian-backed Hezbollah, which has denied a role in the attack. The White House publicly urged Israel to exercise restraint in its response. All right, let's bring in Claire Lopez now, president and founder of Lopez Liberty LLC. Claire, always good to be with you. So tell us a little bit more about this strike, which happened at a soccer field.
Well, yes, Tracy. So Hezbollah has been launching rockets, drones, missiles at northern Israel for quite some time, certainly since October the 7th of last year, 2023. But this one was aimed at a sports area where there are several soccer fields. And this one that got hit was a place where younger children were playing. 12 of them were blown to pieces all over the field. What happened is that the rocket, there was a warning. The kids ran towards the exit to get into a shelter. The rocket landed right in front of the kids, between the kids and the shelter, blowing them up, and a couple of dozen more seriously injured. Hezbollah can deny its responsibility for all it likes, but the point is that rocket was an Iranian-made rocket. That is, it is the Islamic Republic of Iran, through its terror jihad proxy Hezbollah, that did this heinous murder.
Claire, as you mentioned, Israel is vowing retaliation. I know people in the Druze community want that as well. That being said, how concerned are you that this could turn into an all-out war between Israel and Hezbollah?
Well, I mean, the first thing I would say is that Hezbollah has been poking Israel for months now, as I said, ever since certainly last October. There's no country on the face of the earth that would put up with this kind of an attack that blows their children to pieces and not respond. That is unconscionable. And furthermore, the community in which these children were blown up is a Druze community. The Druze are a monotheistic, syncretist belief faith that incorporates elements of Islam, elements of Christianity. And they have tried in a way to stay apart from this, caught in the middle of this conflict between Hezbollah, Iran, and Israel. But at this point, that's not going to be possible any longer. Many Druze, by the way, serve very faithfully in the Israeli Defense Forces. And this village, Majdal Shams, is up on the Golan Heights in northern Israel. So I think that Israel has absolutely no choice. It must retaliate and hard against Hezbollah, not necessarily in any effort or intention to expand a conflict, but this has to be responded to. And the response has to go to Hezbollah, maybe the Dahiyah, for example, the southern part of Beirut. But they have to respond, and there's no question about that.
Claire, almost out of time here, but does Israel even have the capability to conduct a war on Hezbollah and Hamas, and where is this all going?
Yes, they do have that capability. The war in Gaza against Hamas is winding down. Hamas is pretty well debilitated in Gaza. And at the same time, many of Israel's IDF forces and reservists have been shifted to its northern border with Lebanon. Israel has great capability. And Hezbollah better take note of that capability. It's too late now. The response is coming. It began already last night with retaliatory strikes by the IAF, Israeli Air Force. And there is more to come, as it must be.
Okay, Claire, we're going to leave it right there. Always great to get your insights. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, now to Venezuela, where the socialist country's electoral body says Nicolas Maduro has won re-election. Voters from the opposition party show dissent where they could. At the country's capital, demonstrators banged pots and pans for more than an hour. They had hoped the opposition candidate would end 25 years of socialist rule. Instead, Maduro appears set for another six-year term despite widespread reports of irregularities. The United States is among those expressing concern.
We have serious concerns that the result announced does not reflect the will or the votes of the Venezuelan people. It's critical that every vote be counted fairly and transparently, that election officials immediately share information with the opposition and independent observers without delay, and that the electoral authorities publish the detailed tabulation of votes.
For more analysis on Maduro's controversial victory, we go to Aussie Prensa political expert Andres Enriquez, a native of Venezuela. Andres, great to be with you today. We just heard that soundbite from U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, who said in part the result announced does not reflect the will or the votes of the Venezuelan people. Your thoughts on that, and what are you hearing regarding the election results?
Thank you so much for having me, Tracy. Indeed, I think that international pressure is a great support for the cause of freedom for Venezuelans. However, I think it is not enough. During the administration of President Donald Trump, the United States imposed harsh sanctions against Maduro and different leaders of the Chavista regime, but they somehow managed to survive and to remain in power. So I really do think that international pressure is very helpful for us, but indeed, more forceful actions are needed.
Andres, for those who may not have been following this election or politics in general in Venezuela, why was this election so important for the people there?
So the situation in the country is very complicated and delicate at the moment, and the tension in the streets is rapidly increasing. Yesterday, Venezuelans demonstrated their democratic spirit by voting massively throughout the day. All projections and serious national and international polls gave Edmundo González a wide advantage against Maduro. But at the end of the day, the Venezuelan electoral body, which is controlled by the regime, communicated very different results from what Venezuelans expressed with their votes. And today, this same electoral body proclaimed Maduro the winner, without publishing definitive results and with any transparency. And this has caused spontaneous and major protests in many cities of the country, which are quickly escalating in intensity. So this is a crucial time for Venezuela, and what will happen from here is unknown. The fact is that the great majority of Venezuelans, which in fact repudiate Maduro and the Chavista regime, is waiting for Maria Corina Machado's instructions, the leader of the opposition, which yesterday expressed her intention to defend the victory until the end and to the last consequences.
Well, I guess we're going to wait and see what happens. Andres, thank you so much for your insights. We really appreciate you coming on. God bless.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, now to the Olympics, where church leaders are reacting to a performance in the opening ceremonies, which depicted the Last Supper and featured drag queens. A cardinal in Europe says the act showed a lack of respect.
I think a lot was done because I saw so many posts on the net and so on. So there was a strong reaction. And I think people have not expected that. And so some... there were some corrections, interpretation, and so on because of these strong reactions. We want to live our faith normally. And we are very open to other people with other faith and other convictions. But we really ask people, and also our politicians and everybody, that we want the same respect as other faith convictions.
A reaction is also pouring in right here in the United States. Bishop Andrew Cousins, who spearheaded the National Eucharistic Congress earlier this month, called the depiction of the Last Supper, quote, heinous. The head of the Diocese of Crookston, Minnesota, also called on Catholics to respond to the mockery with fasting and prayer. He added that the performers, quote, publicly defamed the Last Supper with their evil display. Another church leader in the U.S. took to social media to voice his disappointment.
France, which used to be called the eldest daughter of the church, Paris that gave us, Thomas Aquinas taught there, and Vincent de Paul was there, King Louis IX, St. Louis. France has sent Catholic missionaries all over the world. France, whose culture, and I mean the honoring of the individual and of human rights and of freedom, is grounded very much in Christianity, felt the right thing to do was to mock the Christian faith.
Well, the night after the opening ceremonies, reports say most of the city of Paris suffered a blackout. Incredibly, the only major light was shining on the Church of the Sacred Heart. And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including spiritual support. We introduce you to one of the Catholic chaplains at the Paris Olympics. And a whistleblower makes allegations into possible mistreatment of migrant children. How lawmakers are responding. Welcome back. More than a half a million unaccompanied migrant children have crossed the southern U.S. border since the start of the Biden administration. Reports claim the government has lost track of more than 85,000 of them. And now several whistleblowers spoke with lawmakers and claim these children are being trafficked, abused and forced to work. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us now with that story. Eric.
Good evening, Tracy. Republican senators are sounding the alarm. They say that the Office of Refugee Resettlement is failing and unaccompanied migrant children are paying the price. Louisiana Senator Bill Cassidy is leading the charge and tells me the Biden administration's border policies are overwhelming the government's ability to process these kids safely.
500,000 children have crossed that border, overwhelming what the government would normally do. So the Office of Refugee Resettlement just began to pop them out, not doing background checks, not doing criminal checks.
Senator Cassidy led a GOP roundtable where whistleblowers told stories, including one about a 13-year-old girl from El Salvador.
Maria was released from the unaccompanied children program to a sponsor in Ohio with confirmed MS-13 gang affiliation. It is unthinkable that the United States government would release a child to a sponsor associated with the gang.
She says within days of reporting this, she was removed from her job.
I was instructed to clean out my work area of all my personal belongings in front of my peers. I was escorted off the site by the federal field specialist and security. I was told I was under investigation.
Catholic immigration advocates are also outraged at the abuse taking place inside holding facilities. Just days ago, the Justice Department filed a lawsuit against the largest housing provider, Southwest Key Programs, which operates 29 shelters across the country, after claims were reported of staff sexually abusing unaccompanied kids.
The HHS ORR program is the biggest failure in government history that I have ever witnessed. Despite raising case after case of trafficking, HHS ORR leadership and the contractor allowed children to be trafficked.
Senator Cassidy says a change in policy must take place.
First, control the border, which the Biden administration has been feckless with. But then if you're not going to control the border, you got to have the resources to process the kids, which they've not done that either. Change either one of them, things get better.
HHS Secretary Javier Becerra said his agency will work with the DOJ to hold all parties accountable. Also, 46 Senate Republicans and one Democratic senator are currently pushing to overturn the Biden administration's rules in processing these migrant children. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
In Paris, the Olympics enter their third day of competition. Overall, the games feature around 11,000 athletes and more than 200 countries. The Summer Games also feature hundreds of volunteers and hired workers. That includes more than three dozen Catholic chaplains. They will provide spiritual help while celebrating Mass and other services. And for more, let's go to Brother James Hayes, who is in Paris. He is one of the chaplains at this year's Games. Brother Jim, great to be with you today. We really appreciate it. Before we talk about the Games and, of course, the important work that you're doing there, I want to talk about the opening ceremonies. A lot of things really raise a lot of red flags for folks, especially that performance of the Last Supper, which really made a mockery of it. A lot of people obviously talking about this, very upset about it. When you saw that performance, what did you think? And also, what are the athletes, that is, in the Catholic community, what are they saying about it?
Sure. Well, I was in front of the television screen here in my community house in Paris with my fellow brothers, and it was very saddening to see that. In some ways, it wasn't that surprising. I mean, I live in France. I've lived here a total of 9 years now. And so you get a feel for what I'd call a slightly schizophrenic attitude in French culture as regards its Catholic heritage. On the one hand, you've got the period of national mourning that they went through when Notre Dame Cathedral went on fire. And then on the other hand, you've got this very revolutionary, secular, anti-clerical attitude, and it's a very strange mix of the two. So in some ways I wasn't surprised. I didn't see it coming, to be fair. I didn't think they would go down that road, but it didn't totally surprise me.
Since the opening ceremonies, how have things been at the Olympics, especially among the athletes, and what are your duties at the Games?
Well, the chaplaincy actually opened, as the village did, a week before the opening ceremony. So we've been there from the opening of the village, getting things ready. And as the teams have arrived, we started to see more and more people coming into the chaplaincy. But the first day or two, I mean, we're on a rota system, so we're not all there at the same time. There's over 150 chaplains from the five major world faiths there. And within Christianity, we have Catholics, Protestants, and Orthodox chaplains. But at any one given time, among the 40 Catholics who were during the Olympics and the Paralympics going to be getting involved in some way, even if it's just for a few days in the chaplaincy, there are only ever three or maximum four Catholic chaplains there at any one given time.
Brother Jim, how important is it to the athletes that you are there with them? What do they say to you?
Well, if you think about it, an athlete, when they're in training, if they're a person of faith, then, you know, they'll make time during their what is a very busy schedule to be able to practice their faith, whether it be prayer times, mass, or people of other faiths attending services with their own community. And I think what the Olympic Village tries to do is it tries to create a sense of continuity for all those that come and live and work there during the period of the Olympics, is that they have the chance to carry on with their daily routines. And for a lot of people, that will be having people available, like a chaplain, and having services put on that would normally be part of their routine.
Well, Brother Jim Hayes, thank you so much for coming on and speaking to us about all this. We really appreciate it. God bless you.
Thank you very much. God bless you.
Day two of the Triathlon Olympic swim training canceled due to poor water quality in the Seine River. Officials say sunny weather and higher temperatures will bring levels of E. coli bacteria below the necessary limits. There is optimism that the event will take place. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, down the Tiber River, see the culmination of the 9-day celebration of Our Lady of Mount Carmel. Plus, the Holy Father's Sunday speech, what God can do with our smallest offerings. Court in the United Kingdom upholds a government ban on puberty blockers for minors. In its ruling, the High Court says blockers carry, quote, very substantial risks and very narrow benefit. The government restrictions went into place in 2022. Well, each year, a statue of the Blessed Virgin is carried in procession through the streets of Rome and by boat along the Tiber River. The celebration involves both old and new inhabitants of a Roman neighborhood and commemorates a 500-year-old miraculous finding. Ora, According to tradition, in the year 1535, fishermen found a statue of the Virgin Mary at the mouth of the Tiber River following a storm. To commemorate the finding, locals annually carry the statue of Madonna Firmola, meaning Our Lady coming from the river, in the procession down the Tiber. This year, Cardinal Pietro Parolin led the procession, and he directed the faithful to be open to the promptings of Mary and be ready to do what she tells us. Well, finally tonight, Pope Francis reminds the faithful that the parable of the loaves and fishes has a message for all of us.
Cosa posso dare al Signore? Il piccolo, cosa posso dare?
In a Sunday talk at the Vatican, the Holy Father says that we are invited to offer to God what we have, even if the offerings seem insignificant or unimportant. Pope Francis also says that every time we go to Mass, it is a chance to recognize and savor the miracle of God's love and grace. And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.